Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 29, 2020. A member of South Sudan Doctors Union says keeping COVID-19 patients at home spreads the disease in the country.
This is dangerous. You know, we are encouraging community transmission. And like this, coronavirus will continue to infect more people within the community.
And South Sudanese military officials dismiss a new report of corruption in the South Sudan People's Defense Forces.
The report covers the corporate profiles and connections to violence and corruption during the time frame of the civil war of four former chiefs of staff of the military, four high-level military officials who commanded the mass atrocities that occurred in Juba in December 2013.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A member of South Sudan Doctors Union says keeping COVID-19 patients at home could lead to the spread of the pandemic across the country. The spokesperson of the country's National Task Force on COVID-19 says the government does not have the capacity to accommodate all positive cases at an isolation center in Juba. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
South Sudan health officials say most COVID-19 cases are self-isolating in their homes and hotels. They say doctors follow up with the patients, including making phone calls to check on their conditions on a daily basis. But Dr. Anthony Garang, deputy chairperson of the South Sudan Doctors Union, says self-isolating rather than housing patients at a government facility exposes more people to the risk of contracting the virus.
This is dangerous. You know, we are encouraging community transmission. And like this, coronavirus will continue to infect more people within the community. That is why an ideal way, even our neighboring countries are practicing isolation of the positive cases, you know, so that they are put in a separate place where they cannot contaminate or infect other people who are not positive. So yes, their presence is actually a threat to continuation of the community transmission.
Dr. Makur Matur, spokesperson of the National Task Force on COVID-19, says the South Sudan government lacks the capacity to isolate all COVID-19 patients in a designated facility.
The affordability in terms of having a larger space to accommodate everybody. And so we decided that for time being, we'll have to get to isolation centers, those who are severely ill, those who are critically ill, those who may not have good conditions for their isolation at home, those may have to be removed to a government isolation center.
Dr. Garang says the doctors union has advised the health ministry to isolate and manage all COVID-19 cases in a designated facility in order to stop community transmission of the virus. He says isolating patients in their homes weakens efforts to end the spread of the pandemic, especially in a country like South Sudan.
Most of our houses are crowded. You find extended families staying together. You will find that people are sharing a room, like 2, 3, 4 people in one room. And you might find if there are separate rooms in the house, you will find that there are only 1 or 2 toilets that are also shared. So it will be very difficult for that person who is COVID positive to isolate totally.
Dr. Angoko Gordon Kwol, incident manager for COVID-19 at the Health Ministry, says out of 978 active COVID-19 cases, only 12 patients are being kept at the isolation facility at the Dr. John Garang Infectious Disease Unit. The rest are primarily self-isolating at home. Dr. Kwol says the health ministry has decided that only COVID-19 patients in critical conditions will be admitted at the isolation center. Kwol agrees that most COVID-19 patients who are self-isolating are not following practicing social distancing because they find isolation conditions unbearable.
Most of these people, you ask them to stay home, they don't stay home. They will complain of hunger.
As of Wednesday, the latest figures available, South Sudan had registered 994 COVID-19 cases, including 6 recoveries and 10 deaths. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some truck drivers are complaining about hostilities towards them by some South Sudanese in Juba who blame truck drivers for spreading the COVID-19. The drivers say they experience attacks, robberies, and harassment along major routes in and out of South Sudan. One of the truck drivers say he and his colleagues no longer interact with people along the major roads for fear of being attacked. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Truck drivers say before COVID-19, they and their town boys would easily interact with communities along their routes, both inside and outside South Sudan. Truck driver Amule Mustafa says that has all changed since the coronavirus outbreak. Mustafa says while it's true that some truck drivers have tested positive, he does not understand why all truck drivers should be blamed for spreading the virus.
This is a global disease that's moved in the air. Drivers cannot be blamed for spreading the virus. The drivers also contract the coronavirus by mistakes, but when you listen to the radios, they always say it's the truck drivers carrying the disease.
Long-distance truck drivers are seen as high-risk COVID-19 carriers after some positive cases were traced back to truck drivers. East African governments have restricted access to their communities and implemented mandatory COVID-19 testing for truck drivers. Mustafa says whenever a truck driver reaches a border crossing, he is treated harshly because everyone suspects he is carrying the virus.
And when we reach borders point, the authorities says the drivers should cross alone and the town boy should remain just because they think we drivers are carriers of coronavirus. But I want to tell people to know that truck drivers are not the ones who imported the virus from China, Europe or America, because we cannot go to those countries with our trucks.
Truck driver Isaac Lomago says he and other truckers no longer interact with communities along major roads for fear of being attacked. Lomago says even South Sudanese truck drivers cannot socialize or interact with local community members out of fear of being attacked. Speaking in Kakwa, Lomago urges the South Sudan government to support truck drivers who test positive for COVID-19.
We hear that in Uganda, if someone has tested positive for COVID-19, he or she is taken into government quarantine or isolation facility with full care until you test negative and then they will let you go home. But here in South Sudan, one of our drivers tested positive, but all they said, he should eat alone, keep distance and don't move around. We are obeying the doctor's advice, but I've not seen any other support that the government has provided.
Speaking in Arabic, Simon Jamus, a truck driver who tested positive for the coronavirus, says the government should provide support to COVID-19 patients so they don't infect others.
Some people are wicked. They will go and mingle with others while looking for food. They are right because they don't have food to eat since they are under isolation or quarantine in their homes. So should they die of both hunger and coronavirus disease?
Truck drivers have also complained about long delays at some border entry points where they are required to wait for results of their mandatory coronavirus tests before continuing on their routes. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
African nations are having diverse experience with the coronavirus pandemic. South Africa is the continent's hotspot. Uganda is beginning to ease restrictions after no reported deaths. And the tropical island of Mauritius appears to have gotten the virus under control. Health ministers from those nations met recently to discuss the unique challenges the pandemic poses. and why preparation is the only thing that matters, regardless of where you live. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The coronavirus, medical experts like to say, doesn't care about borders or language or any of the cultural aspects of humanity. Like viruses the world over, it just sees targets. But since the virus appeared on the African continent some 3 months ago, it has taken a different course in different countries. The continent recently reported 100,000 positive cases, but they're spread unevenly. South Africa leads the continent with more than 25,000 cases and rapid growth, whereas the small tropical island of Mauritius hasn't seen a new case of local transmission in more than a month. Meanwhile, countries such as Rwanda and Uganda that have previously sparred with epidemics have reported cases in the hundreds, but no deaths. Dr. Matsidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization's Regional Director for Africa, says the organization is training more than 10,000 health workers in an attempt to decentralize their response to deal with these different realities.
Most countries still have fewer than 1,000 reported cases. This means that as governments ease lockdowns and other social measures, it's important that the strong public health measures are in place all over the territories, not just in the capital cities, that communities are empowered and enabled to take preventive actions, and that we continue working on strengthening health systems and delivering essential services to people.
In Mauritius, the nation's Minister of Health and Wellness, Dr. Kailash Kumar Singh Jagutpal, said preparation was key to the nation's response and its apparent success in containing the virus.
Mauritius registered the first cases of COVID-19 in March. Our monitoring and preparedness action plan was in place already since mid of January. The Mauritian Prime Minister himself chairs a high-level committee on a daily basis. This allows the government to have daily updates on the evolution of the pandemic and implementation measures.
Despite seeing rapidly growing clusters of the outbreak, South Africa recently announced a new approach. Houses of worship will now be allowed to reopen, with limited congregation sizes and precautions. That, Health Minister Dr. Zweli Mkhize explained, is part of the strategy. Deputize trusted institutions, like churches, to teach South Africans how to live with the virus in the long term.
It has become clear that we are likely to have this pandemic for more than a year, maybe even to 2 years. And therefore, it is important for us to understand that there is a degree of easing. And in this process is to begin to motivate for every part of our society to focus on social and behavioral change.
And in the East African nation of Uganda, which has yet to report any deaths amid its fewer than 300 cases, Health Minister Dr. Jane Acheng said the health system was already well fortified by other lethal epidemics.
Uganda has had opportunity to have several outbreaks. From the year 2000 to date, at least we have had over 6 Ebola outbreaks and about 5 Marburg outbreaks and several other outbreaks. And these outbreaks have given us opportunity to build capacity, but also to build systems in place which can easily be activated to respond to epidemics as they are occurring.
Moeti, who said that cases in Africa remain lower than in other parts of the world, said one thing holds true across this continent. The virus doesn't let its guard down in its quest to survive. And so, she said, we shouldn't either. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, COVID-19 suspects escape from quarantine center. Find out where after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
Try to like ask somebody for money, and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. More than 400 Malawians who returned from South Africa have escaped from a coronavirus screening camp in the economic capital, Blantyre. Test results released Wednesday were positive for 46 of the escapees, while nearly 300 had yet to be tested. The situation raises fears the virus could quickly spread in Malawi, which has so far confirmed 110 infections and 4 deaths. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Social media videos showed tens of Malawians jumping over fences at Blantyre Skamuzu Stadium Wednesday morning while police watched. The stadium was being used as a coronavirus screening camp for Malawian migrant workers returning from South Africa, the African country worst hit by the virus. Malawian police said the returnees complained of a lack of toilets and bathrooms in the stadium, then began forcing their way out on Tuesday. Police service spokesperson James Kadadzera spoke by messaging application from the capital, Lilongwe.
We were told that most of the returnees wanted to go home due to lack of necessary social amenities. Some were actually seen forcing their way out. And as the police, we did our part to making sure that we contained the situation.
Test results released Wednesday night showed that 46 of those who escaped tested positive for the virus. Another 300 escapees had yet to be tested, raising fears the virus could spread further in Malawi, a country with one of the weakest healthcare systems in Africa. Health officials are trying to downplay those concerns. Gift Kawalazira is the head of preventive health services at Blantyre District Health Office. Speaking at a press conference broadcast live Wednesday, he said authorities would easily trace the escapees as they have their contact details.
We must admit it was a system failure, but people can take solace in the fact that whatever was happening on an open air. Kamuzu Stadium is an open air, so the chances of actually you contracting the disease are quite minimal as compared to when if you are sitting in a bus or if you are in an enclosed space.
Kawalazira says authorities have since beefed up security at other screening camps to prevent further escapes of those being screened of the virus. But questions are being raised about how seriously authorities are taking the pandemic after reports that some of those being held bribed police into letting them leave. Police spokesman Kadadzera says they are investigating.
We got wind of the same. So our officers are on ground investigating, but let me assure you that we as a police service, it's our duty to making sure that we are taking a role in protecting further spread of this deadly disease.
Meanwhile, authorities announced Thursday that nearly 600 more Malawians are expected to return home from South Africa over the weekend. 200 of them are expected to arrive by military helicopters in the capital, Lilongwe, while the others will arrive by bus. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
A new investigative report says South Sudan's top military leaders have engaged in business activities involving money laundering and corruption. The Sentry report says senior government and rebel officials in South Sudan led troops that committed human rights violations and accumulated enormous wealth during the December 2013 conflict. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Shannon Mizzi, an investigator with The Sentry, an organization that exposes corruption, authored a new report entitled Making a Killing, South Sudanese Military Leaders' Wealth Explained. She says her year-long investigation found that South Sudan's last four army chiefs of staff and three opposition militia leaders have engaged in business activities indicative of money laundering and corruption, and many of the men share personal or commercial ties with President Salva Kiir.
The report covers the corporate profiles and connections to violence and corruption during the time frame of the civil war of four former chiefs of staff of the military, four high-level military officials who commanded the mass atrocities that occurred in Juba in December 2013 that really ignited what would be a really long civil war. And then the report looks at several opposition militia leaders as well.
She says the Sentry investigation directly links the men's business activities to the atrocities committed in South Sudan and money laundering.
Each of the former chiefs of staff of the military has moved unexplained wealth through international banks and purchased luxury real estate properties abroad in places like Australia and Uganda, valued at far more than what their modest public servant salaries would allow normally. And we also found that the companies of military leaders included in the report received major state contracts or preferential access to foreign currency.
Mizzi says the military officials investigated in the report have significant international connections in the form of business partners and immediate relatives living abroad. She says South Sudan's government must implement all provisions of the September 2018 peace deal, which include integration of security forces and ensuring transparency in financial transactions.
There should be increased oversight and transparency around officials' asset declarations and around military procurement processes. And it also recommends that independent auditors and inspectors general be appointed within the security sector to help keep the sector financially accountable to the South Sudanese people.
Mizzi says competitive bidding for contracts should be mandatory, which would dismantle the corruption that she says exists at the highest level of South Sudan's security sector. She says the international community must also ensure that the government takes those steps as stipulated in the peace agreement.
Bodies like the African Union and the United Nations and the many countries that want to see peace last in South Sudan have a number of tools available to them to help protect funds and resources meant for important things like education and pandemic response and security force integration. Those measures include things like network sanctions, anti-money laundering measures, and asset seizure and recovery.
Mizzi says the government must also set up a hybrid court for wartime crimes. A hybrid court would bring together judges and prosecutors from South Sudan and across Africa to try suspected criminals. Human Rights Watch says the court has yet to be formed because there is no communication between South Sudan and the African Union on forming the court. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
The former head of South Sudan Army, General Gabriel Jok Riak, says the Sentry report is meant to tarnish his image. South Sudan's military spokesperson, Major General Lul Roy Kong, says the report is inconsistent with what he calls facts on the ground. He says the Army's lawyers are looking at taking legal action against the Sentry. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Military spokesman Major General Luruai Kong says he and Chief of Defense Forces Johnson Juma Okot found the Sentry report full of misleading information.
Both of us discovered that there were a lot of inconsistencies and lack of clarities on exactly some of the alleged crimes were committed at. For example, in the report it indicated that they had diverted money meant for buying food rations. Then as a result, his forces went on looting spree for them to survive. The report did not indicate where he was commanding forces at. You know, our formations is in form of division. They did not name the division that he was commanding and the time frame.
The report named other army and opposition generals, including James Hosmai, former chief of staff Paul Malongawan, former chief of staff Oyai Denga Jack, Salfa Mathung Gangdit, Bola Kudbol, Grang Mabil, Marial Chanwong, Gadhot Gadkwoth, Johnson Olonj, David Yao Yao, and Gabriel Jok Riak, all of whom are accused of profiting from what is described as South Sudan's corruption system of patronage. Kong says he cannot respond to the accusations leveled against the other generals, for he was not able to get in touch with them, noting some are now rebel commanders, while others are now politicians. South Sudan in Focus reached by phone the recently fired Chief of Defense Forces, General Gabriel Jogriak, who is accused of taking more than $300,000, money which Dalbit Petroleum Company reimbursed to the army after failing to deliver fuel to the SPLA Sector 1 in Wau. The Sintery says the money was not returned to the treasury account. It says Jock, who was Sector 1 commander in Wau at the time, used the money to buy a house in Uganda. General Jock admits the money was legally transferred to his personal accounts for the use of Sector 1 and not his personal spendings.
My account was being used by the sector. It is very clear that the money was transferred into my account as a fund. It was not me who did it. It was the general headquarters. And if they have any problem with the general headquarters, they should ask the general headquarters. Not me. The person who directed Dalbit to transfer money to my account. How it is spent is in none of their business.
He says before the formation of the then semi-autonomous government of Southern Sudan in 2005, he was earning $12,000 a month from his hotel business in Yei. Jock insists it was through his hotel business that he met with a Ugandan businessman mentioned in the report.
Haji Kangabe is a Ugandan trader who came to Ye and got my house at a strategic location and requested me to have joint venture with him. 35% for me because the house belonged to me and 75% to him and his son.
Yeah.
So we read the agreement. My house was made to be a lodge. In 2007, Haji Kangabe decided to sell his shares to me. $175,000. Haji Kangabe gave me $10,000. I bought a vehicle, and that vehicle was hired by the electricity corporation in Yei. That was in 2005, October. And they paid me $4,000 one month. I became having two cars, three cars, four cars. Then all of them were hired by the demining commission.
Jock says he used that money to legally buy a home in Kampala. He says the Sintery report was meant to tarnish his image and that of the South Sudan Army.
They have the intention of tarnishing my image because every time they come up with my name, the money they are talking about is 309,524,000. Is that the biggest corruption in South Sudan since 2013? What kind of luxury house that could be bought at that amount? There's no corruption in the SPLA.
Kong says the Chief of Defense Forces is considering a lawsuit against the Sintery.
He also had instructed his lawyer to take a legal action against the organization that compiled the report. Being a military commander does not allow you to be in touch with the financial resources. Whenever we are fighting, what we are given are military equipment, ammunition, and other requirements, other tools for fighting the war.
Kong says the procurement is not in the hands of the military. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with Alison Muzika singing in his native Mondo language.
Sons Musica, Mundu Boys, Ijeje, Narere Kamango Ekoti, Borsa Kote Mungo Fere Lakoto, Imama Lamani Kazu Kamungo Kote, Muru Kote Mungo Fere Lakoto, Imama Lamani Kazu Kamungo Kote, Borsa Kote Mungo Fere Lakoto, Imama Lamani Kazu Kamungo Kote, Muru Kete Fere la koto, de mama la mani kazu kangungu kuti.
Uba munekai, una munekai, undu munekai, ada munekai.
We've been listening to Alison Muzika singing in Mundu language. The Mundu are found in Yei and Maridi counties. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Jenguka, Urusewaramu.